Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the Twitter at Mike Golic Jr. at Chris Canty 99. And we're fielding your calls on who has the most to gain in the 2022 postseason. Join the conversation, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And Gojo, with that being said, we got to have our guy chime in on that question that we just asked to our listeners. Who has the most to gain in the 2022 postseason? Let's go out to the hotline now and bring on SportsCenter anchor Kevin Negande. And Kevin, I know you're a Philadelphia sports fan. We'll have plenty to get to on that angle on the back half of this, but right now, I got to ask you that question. Who has the most to gain in the 2022 postseason that's left in the playoff field, player or coach?
I think naturally, what's up, fellas, by the way? I think naturally, the first guess would be Matthew Stafford, right? Considering, what he did and try to get over the hump and you win your first playoff game. But I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers because, in the end, Aaron Rodgers is an all-time quarterback. But when you get in the space of looking at all-time quarterbacks and what they've accomplished, Aaron Rodgers has just one Super Bowl win. And let's not forget what he has experienced the last 2 years in the NFC Championship games. So I think Aaron Rodgers has the most to gain by being the one seed, and you don't have to potentially go through, like, let's just say Tom Brady and the Bucs. They've got to go through the Rams and potentially the Packers, right? Who knows what's going to happen this weekend against the Niners because the Niners match up really well. But I think quarterback's going to be a big, 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 big issue here for the Niners in trying to score points against the Packers. So for me, it's Aaron Rodgers because how it's all laid out for him. He has the most to gain in any type of conversation. And then if you think this is an NFC-AFC conversation, you can go to the other side and say Josh Allen, but I'm stuck on this one thing with Aaron Rodgers in the conversation of GOAT with all the talent that he has. He has one Super Bowl win to show for it and two just unforgettable type losses in the NFC title game, especially last year against Brady and company.
Oh, yeah. Craig, listen, I completely agree with you on this one, Kev. Aaron Rodgers is the one I brought up in all of this. You see, outside of Tom Brady, who I think kind of stands alone in most of these conversations about all-time quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers is right on the cusp of that next group with the Peyton Mannings, the Montanas, the Elways of the world, and has a chance to really, especially in conjunction with an MVP that he will likely win again this year, really add to that resume in a meaningful way. Now, another player that had a lot to gain in this postseason, potentially, we thought could have been Jalen Hurts. It was a long shot for the Eagles against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which, Kev, I don't know if you heard, I put my faith in the Eagles +8.5, and now Chris Canty is going to watch me eat a mayo-covered cricket later on in the show because I am an idiot. So, yeah, listen.
Listen, and I love that you went with your heart because us Philadelphia fans go with our heart on many things emotionally and how we believe a team. And, you know, going into that game last week, taking 8.5 points, I would have felt pretty good about that because if the Eagles, considering how the Bucs didn't have a lot of, like, their weapons and Fournette couldn't play, if the Eagles could just control the ball and put together drives. But for Hurts, I've said this whole season, guys, I thought it was a 9-win team at the ceiling, 6-win team at the bottom, and they were 2-5, and they made the playoffs. All I wanted was Jalen Hurts to get the reps and grow every single week. And it felt like we were getting to that point. And then when the Eagles clinched the playoff berth, all I said was this playoff experience is going to be great for him. It was a disaster because what it did was it exposed, and playoff football does this, it exposes all your weaknesses. And the one thing Todd Bowles, I thought, did an incredible job was Hurts can't throw rolling to his left. He cannot complete consistent passes that way when he's rolling to his left. And we saw that, I mean, that awful interception when the Eagles finally had some momentum on that drive at the end of the first half and they were going to get the ball in the second half and they're moving. And that was just an awful pass to Devontae Smith that was picked off in the end zone. And what was he doing? He was rolling to his left. So it was one of those games that you go into it and you're like, okay, I believe that he'll be back next year as the franchise quarterback in the sense of year number two, let's see what we got. And then after the game, it was just like, oh boy, that wasn't that wasn't good, and all the blemishes all came out, and where have we gotten better? I don't know where he has made that next step after that performance, because, listen, I rode the Eagles. I knew who they played in the second half of the season. Wasn't their fault, but they were not good against quality teams if you look at the entire resume of the season, and then, boom, playing a quality team, they fell apart, and that's going to stand out to me. And Howie Roseman has to hit on this draft like he did in 2021.
And, Kevin, it sounds like Howie Roseman is content with Jalen Hurts going into 2022 as the starting quarterback for the Eagles. So that'll be interesting to see how they handle this offseason and all the draft capital that they have. But
Chris, can I say one thing, though?
Go ahead.
I know Roseman said that today, but I think he was supposed to say that, right? Because you don't know what the market's going to be like, so you've got to make sure the quarterback is okay. But the mentality of Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman is, we don't want to just make the playoffs. We want to win the Super Bowl. Now, I think that's like one of those, oh, well, that's obvious. Every team has that. Nah, every team does not have that same mentality, especially when it comes to the approach, the draft capital that they have, and the salary cap issue that they had last year. And now they no longer have that issue coming into this offseason. I think the Eagles are going to try to do whatever they can to get a marquee quarterback with the draft capital that they have. And that means who's in the market? Potentially Russell Wilson. Who's in the market? Deshaun Watson. When you hear the Eagles' name around that, I think there's a lot of smoke and fire connected to that, because they're going to explore all the options at quarterback.
Kev, if they didn't land one of those veterans, would you want them to take a rookie in the draft?
This is a really interesting question. It depends on where, right? Because this is not a draft that you could point to like we have in previous years, where you have multiple quarterbacks going to top 10. I'm kind of curious about, you know, I like Malik Willis. I'm curious about him. I'm curious about Kenny Pickett. At the beginning of the season, I loved Sam Howell. Now I'm like, Matt Corral has a big arm. I'm not sure you're going to get that answer that you think you should be getting if you draft a first-round quarterback from these four guys in the next couple of years. I just don't think so right now.
Talking with SportsCenter anchor Kevin Negande, and speaking of trades, Kevin, Charles Barkley had some strong words for the Philadelphia Sixers brass in saying that they need to trade Ben Simmons and stop wasting Joel Embiid's all-time great season. Are you team Barkley with this one, or are you on Daryl Morey's side when it comes to holding out for trades for Ben Simmons?
I love Chuck, by the way. And he also said something about disparaging about the Philly fan base, because he has a special relationship with them for 8 years. And Chuck's one of those guys, he could say, and it's like, yeah, it's one of your family members saying it, so it doesn't matter, right? So when Chuck said stuff about Philly fans being hard, well, they're not going to forgive Ben Simmons. And that's the truth. But I wouldn't make a trade just to make a trade. Like, I believe in the long-term plans here with Daryl Morey, where he is trying to land a star. And you may not get the star here in Ben Simmons in a trade, but can you potentially do it in the offseason? Can you get a guy that's going to actually get you closer to another piece that's a star? I don't think that Daryl Morey should blink here as they approach the deadline. If Ben wants to lose a year, he loses a year. But the one thing I look at the chemistry on this team, Joel looks at Tyrese Maxey as a guy that could potentially be a star. And that stands out to me. He looks at Thybulle as a guy that he's my defensive guy. He's going to be a star with me defensively. And I think Joel understands the long-term big picture with Daryl is, hey, listen, we're going to do this the right way. We're not going to panic like maybe they did a few years ago and trying to make trades for Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. I think that they're going to trust this whole thing, and I hate saying that, trust the process. But with Daryl, I do trust his process, because why are you going to settle and then give away a player that potentially could be an all-star for the next 5 to 10 years because of his defensive play and his point guard abilities on passing, just to panic right now in the second half of the season?
Important distinction. Don't trust the process. Trust his process.
Because yeah, exactly.
It is different in this situation right here. That is certainly going to be all the talk heading up to that February 10th trade deadline in the NBA. Kevin Negande, you guys know you can catch him on the 6 o'clock Sports Center with L. Duncan each and every day here. Kev, always a blast talking to you, man. We'll hit you back soon, okay?
Go, Joe. have a lot of water, man, like a lot of water by your side. Chris, enjoy this. Trust me, and I'm glad you didn't bet it as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to have a pail right next to him too, Kevin.
Nah, man, listen, ironclad stomach here, guys. Ironclad stomach on this side. We'll get to all eating right. Crickets in a little bit here.
Maybe. I hear it's the consistency of the cricket that gets you, though.
Yeah, I'm just worried about one of the legs coming back to bite me here later on. As we turn everyone's stomachs in the car, keep with us here, I promise. That'll come later. Coming up next, though, I want to hit on what we talked with Kevin about here. It is a strange quarterback class coming up. Mel Kiper has just released a mock draft looking forward towards this group. We'll tell you the two teams that may get that itch and all of a sudden start looking up at one of these quarterbacks when it's all said and done. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Talking who has the most to gain in the 2022 postseason. What player, what coach, who has the most to gain during the playoffs? And let's go out to Matt in Kansas. Matt, you're on Kenny and Golic Jr. Who you got?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing pretty good.
Man, good talking to you guys, man. I'm a car salesman. I was in a car. I heard you guys having this conversation. I had to call in, man. I'm a diehard, lifelong Cincinnati Bengals fan, so I might be just a little biased here.
Yes!
But I'm going to come from this angle. So out of all these teams that are in the playoffs right now, which one is the most synonymous with being a loser? I would say that'd be us. Which one has had the least playoff success over the last decade plus, or however you want to phrase that? I would say, again, that'd be us. Which team has a head coach that mid-season a lot of people were calling for him to be fired, had the highest odds of being fired before the season started? That would be Zach Taylor. So I'm going to look at it this way, and I actually agree with the Aaron Rodgers and the Packers side of it and the other kind of ways you guys framed the question. Josh Allen with the Bills, of course. But I look at it from this way, man. Joe Burrow's 25 years old. He wins a Super Bowl year two. I think that puts him from where he is now, which is a star, to super stardom. And I think that changes the entire dynamic of the franchise. Zach Taylor went in a Super Bowl.
Matt, I would agree with you on that one as far as the trajectory for all of this stuff. Like, this is the conversation we had around Josh Allen as well. It'd be well ahead of schedule if you did this with Joe Burrow, too, and all this stuff. Maybe, Chris, it's because I don't think it's as realistic. Like, because part of this is also, I think, factoring in reality when you look at this postseason here. And in my mind, like, the Bengals have already made such substantial gains. Like, God bless Matt in Kansas for saying just the last decade. Like, the Bengals have gone 31 years in between playoff wins. So it has been a long damn time. And Joe Burrow has already changed our perception about what this franchise is capable of.
Yeah, the Bengals are playing with house money right now. Like, if they lose to the Titans this weekend, nobody's going to look at this season as an abject failure or a disaster. People look at this as a huge leap forward for that program. And, I mean, Gojo, you can make the argument that in a three-year span from your last year to college through your second year in the NFL, no quarterback has had a better run at this thing than Joe Burrow.
Yep.
Like, it's pretty damn good. I mean, historically great his senior year in college. They win the national title. His rookie season gets cut short because of the knee injury, Chase Young cutting him in half. But then bouncing back from that knee injury and having the season that he's put together and allowing the Cincinnati Bengals fans to actually dream of not only getting to the playoffs, but now winning playoff games and going on a run, completely changed the culture of that franchise. And that's where I think a lot of people miss the boat in terms of praising Joe Burrow. We talk about the different things that he can do with the football, the production, but we don't talk about the intangibles that he's bringing to the table, because that is a different air that the Cincinnati Bengals are breathing right now. This is something that they were able to get done that Marvin Lewis, Andy Dalton, and A.J. Green couldn't get done, actually getting to the postseason and winning a playoff game. And now, looking at this game that they have against the Titans, a lot of people are saying they are a live dog in this game. Now, I think both you and I anticipate that the Bengals are going to lose, but still, they have the opportunity to be competitive in this one, and I think that's a complete shift in the perception of who the Cincinnati Bengals are.
Keep those calls coming. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Who's got the most to gain heading into this 2022 postseason? But what you just mentioned there, what Joe Burrow's done for this franchise, is what every team hopes when they pick a quarterback high in the NFL draft. And I think Mel Kiper Jr.'s latest mock draft heading towards this 2022 NFL draft kind of sheds light on just what a mixed bag this is going to be and how difficult it is. Like, we go into every draft, Chris, because we're a quarterback-obsessed NFL culture, wondering who the first guy is going to be off the board, how many we're going to get in the first round. And in Mel's mock draft, the first quarterback he has coming off the board is at 11 overall to the Washington football team. He's got Malik Willis out of Liberty, who, before the season, Chris, that would have felt like a lot of the conversation that people were willing to have. Malik Willis, incredibly talented, a guy who can wow you with dual threat ability, has a live arm. But based on everyone I've talked to, and he's the quarterback I am most excited to study because I didn't get to see as much of him during this season, I'd be stunned if he's the first guy off the board, especially in what's considered a wild card class. To me, he is the one that I have the hardest time wrapping my arms around right now. So I'd be pretty stunned on that one.
Yeah, and I don't like the landing spot either with the Washington football team because that franchise has proven one thing. They don't know what they're doing when it comes to developing quarterbacks that are high picks. I mean, you had Dwayne Haskins, which was a disaster, and then before that, the one that pops into my mind is how they handled Josh Campbell. So I don't know that this is the franchise that you want to be drafting, a quarterback that has some warts and that seems like he's more of a project than the other three guys that are going to be taken in that first round. So yeah, I'm with you on this one. I don't know that Malik Willis will be my first off the board. I'm an ACC guy, so I have a little bit of a bias, and I watch a ton of ACC football. So I lean toward Kenny Pickett from Pitt and what he's been able to do, stayed the extra year. The kid has shown that he's a winner. He can make all the requisite throws that an NFL quarterback would have to make. And then there are some leadership intangibles there as well. So to me, if I was picking and I had a need at quarterback, that would be the first direction that I turn to.
Yeah, Chris, I'm with you on this one. Right now, if I had to rank the quarterbacks that we're talking about here, it'd be Kenny Pickett out of Pitt as the one that you just mentioned there. It would be Matt Corral out of Ole Miss after him, a guy who for some parts of this season was getting dark horse Heisman talk. After that's where it gets interesting. Like I said, I need to see more of Malik Willis myself, so I'd put Sam Howell out of North Carolina in front of him for the body of work that we saw there. And then after that, I'd go Malik Willis, and then Desmond Ridder is going to be the other name. Quarterback out of Cincinnati, a guy who stayed, was a veteran part of what they did this past season. The teams involved in this are going to be interesting. We know the Philadelphia Eagles are always going to be talked about with this because they got three first round picks. And man, if you could see one of these quarterbacks sliding into the back half of the first round, I'd love to see them take a flyer on one. The other team I'd say keep an eye on in all this, sitting right at six, the Carolina Panthers. That is a team that has really mismanaged the quarterback position, has an owner in David Tepper who is highly aggressive and seems wholly unsatisfied with the job they've done so far. I could see them getting up and taking a risk at this spot. So we'll ask the question, will the Eagles and Giants maybe break moves by taking a quarterback in the first round?
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
You can tweet at us, at Mike Golic Jr., at ChrisCaney99, if you think your team needs to take a flyer on one of these guys in the first. But coming up next, it is time. Today is technically our Tuesday because of the holiday on Monday, so that means it's time for top five, bottom five from the NFL wildcard weekend after this word from Indeed. Now, guys, running your business, it requires a lot of running around. From bookkeeping to client meetings, you run it all. So by the time you got a hire, well, you've run out of energy. Luckily, with Indeed Instant Match, you immediately receive a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description the moment you sponsor a job. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers four times more hires than all the other job sites combined. Hiring can finally run smoothly with Indeed. To learn more, visit Indeed.com/credit. Back with the top five from Wild Card Weekend in the NFL next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the Twitter at Mike Golic Jr. and at ChrisCanty99. And even though, Gojo, it's a Wednesday, it really is a Tuesday for us because we had the holiday on Monday. And so we have to get to NFL top five, bottom five. And this week you're in the penthouse with the NFL top five. So, my man, without further ado, let's get to your list.
Which teams were great?
Breaks a tackle at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
What player was not?
Does he hang on? Intercepted! He couldn't hang on!
This is the NFL Top 5, Bottom 5.
Number 5.
Let's get to Top 5, Bottom 5 from the NFL Super Wild Card Weekend. And start this off with number 5. Chris, I know we said that with Matthew Stafford, it wasn't the game of his life, but I will give number 5 collectively to the Rams' additions. From this offseason to midseason, you look at Matthew Stafford. He avoided the big mistakes, which is what we had asked of him coming off the end of the season. 13 of 17 for 202 and 2 touchdowns. Odell Beckham Jr., their midseason pickup after the Browns and Baker Mayfield could not get along anymore with Odell Beckham Jr., 4 receptions on 4 targets for 54 yards and a touchdown, and that 40-yard pass to Cam Akers. And then Von Miller, brought over from the Denver Broncos, 1 sack, 3 tackles for loss in this game. They showed up in the postseason, which is what this has all been about for the Rams this year.
No doubt about it. All of those dudes came to play, Gojo. And I want to give another late addition to your Rams additions that made a huge difference in Wild Card Weekend. That being defensive coordinator Raheem Morris, coming over from Atlanta last year, now the DC for the LA Rams. Masterclass on what he did to Cliff Kingsbury and that Arizona Cardinals offense. In the first half of that game, a lot of single high coverages, cover 3, man coverage, and Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury had no answers for it. Average time to throw for Kyler was 3.1 seconds. He was under pressure 47% of his dropbacks. They harassed him all night long, including having a pick 6 on that situation. So good on Raheem Morris being able to put his imprint on the Rams postseason run.
Big time imprint, no doubt, from everyone involved there. Let's keep this thing moving.
Number 4.
And let's stay in the NFC West for this one because, Chris, I was floored. Debo Samuel's been spectacular for most of this season. But really, since the first time the Niners and the Packers met this year in about week 5, what Debo has been able to do for this team was on full display then in their wild card win over the Dallas Cowboys. 72 rushing yards and a touchdown, over 100 combined yards on the day. That 72 rushing yards was the most by a primary wide receiver in a playoff game in the Super Bowl era. So, Chris, to me, he was the most dynamic playmaker on that field for the day. And quite honestly, that's been the case for almost whatever field he's been on for the most part of this season.
Yeah, I'm sure he wished that number was 73. Had he been able to convert on that fourth down, we wouldn't have had the late game drama in that win the 49ers had over Dallas. But in looking at the situation, you're right. I mean, Debo Samuels is a problem. I mean, the Cowboys wanted no parts of Debo, and I'm pretty sure the Green Bay Packers don't want to see him either in the divisional round. But we talk about Cooper Kupp and the historically great season that he's had. I mean, Debo Samuel is not that far behind. Cooper Kupp, 1,965 yards from scrimmage, 16 touchdowns on 149 touches. Debo Samuel's 1,770 yards, 14 touchdowns, and 136 touches. So really not that far off. He's second in yards after reception, yards after catch, behind Cooper Kupp. So Debo Samuel's putting together a historic season and has turned himself into one of the scariest weapons in the National Football League in short order.
Kyle Shanahan's system is all about key players that can be extremely versatile. And that used to be George Kittle. That used to be Kyle Juszczyk. Debo Samuel now taking center stage. Let's keep going.
Number 3.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio going through the top 5 from Wild Card Weekend. And I got to give this one. Number 3 goes to Tom Brady. And it's easy. Chris, you mentioned yesterday we sometimes overlook him because of the greatness. Tom Brady and the Bucs went out and absolutely put it on the Philadelphia Eagles. They're the reason I'm going to eat a mayo-covered cricket later in the show. But for Tom Brady, it also adds to an already insane postseason stat. Tom Brady posted his 18th career double-digit postseason win on Sunday. That is 7 more than the next closest quarterback in Troy Aikman, who's got 11 such wins. But Tom Brady now has 2 more double-digit postseason wins than any other quarterback has total postseason wins. Joe Montana's got 16 postseason wins in NFL history, 2 fewer than Tom Brady's double-digit wins alone. Chris, he just continues to stamp, sign, seal, deliver every bit of the accolades we want to pour on, dude.
I guess I got to say it this way, Gojo. Out of the quarterbacks remaining in the playoff field, sure, Tom Brady's not the most talented physically. But if I had to have a quarterback to win a game to save my life, there's no question I'm going with Tom Brady. I think that's the greatest compliment that you can play one of these players. He's a top competitor, and he continues to be such at age 44. It's ridiculous.
All of it's just so disheartening for everybody else. Let's keep this moving.
Number two.
Number two in the non-Brady division of mere mortals. How about the Bengals ending a 31-year playoff drought with their win this past weekend? You guys all saw the stats and the clips that no text message had been sent since the Bengals had won a playoff game. People were finally able to do that. It was the third longest span between playoff wins by a franchise in NFL history at 31 years and 9 days, just behind the Lions from 1957 and the Cardinals from 1947. Rarefied putrid air that, thanks to Joe Burrow, they are now out of.
No doubt about it. And the Bengals got an assist from the officials, but I'll feature that in the bottom five that I got coming up a little later in our show. But good on Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals for being able to step up and get this done. I know Bengals fans been waiting on this a long time, and they can actually enjoy this one.
All right, time to finish it off.
Number one.
Number one from this weekend, it was Josh Allen. He has the football world buzzing from this weekend. His combination of what he can do with his arm, with his legs, was on full display as they won the rubber match against the New England Patriots. And Chris, you mentioned it was the highest passer rating in a game that we saw this season, merely a couple of weeks after he had had the worst passer rating of any quarterback this season. But not only on the top end was it the best for this year, Josh Allen had a nearly perfect passer rating in this game. It'll go down as the fifth highest passer rating in a postseason game in NFL history. That is the kind of space that he is in right now, and as we've talked today about the player with the most to gain, it's why we can look out, project, and say, man, if Josh Allen could add an AFC championship win and a Super Bowl to his resume, now all of a sudden we get to start having some fun with him.
No doubt, but here's the thing that kind of makes it a head-scratcher for me, Gojo. It's not like the New England Patriots didn't see it coming. You saw it a month ago when the division was up for grabs, what Josh Allen did, over 300 yards passing, over 50 yards rushing, and you let him turn around and do it to you again. It's ridiculous. You know, one is a one-off and two is a trend. Like, it's just starting to look like a situation where Belichick has no answers for Josh Allen. They beat him four out of the last five times they played him, and it feels like the Buffalo Bills now have a stranglehold on the AFC East Division. So good on Josh Allen for being able to provide that high-level quarterback play to put this franchise in that position.
That is the top five from NFL Super Wild Card Weekend, helping you jumpstart the new year. You can jumpstart the new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now at retailers nationwide. Chris Canty will have you on the bottom five coming up in just a little bit. But coming up next is the underdog favorite in the NFL going to be a repeat two weekends in a row. We'll get to maybe the worst matchup on paper next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Taking your calls on who has the most to gain in the 2022 NFL postseason. What player, what coach, we want to hear from you. Again, that number is 888-729-3776. And Gojo, one of the matchups that feels like it's a bit one-sided in the divisional round happens to be the Green Bay Packers going up against the San Francisco 49ers, who had a thrilling win that came down to the last play down in Dallas this past week. It was an upset that a lot of people in NFL circles predicted going into Super Wild Card Weekend. And now it feels like this is one of those games, one of those spots, where San Francisco might be a little outmatched. Now, that hasn't been the case under Kyle Shanahan going up against the Green Bay Packers because they haven't lost when they've met up in the postseason. And Aaron Rodgers, as the Packers quarterback, is 0-3 in his matchups against San Francisco. This is a franchise that he grew up watching when he was a little kid. And so I got to ask you, do you give the 49ers much of a chance in this game against Green Bay?
Absolutely. I think after what we saw last weekend, Chris, this 49ers team is going to be a tough out for anyone, right? When you can do the things they did with Dak Prescott on pass rush attempts with four rushers. So standard pass rush, just sending four guys. Five sacks, held them under 50% completion percentage. There are some good dudes on that offensive line here. And for the Packers, I know they're getting the cavalry back right now. Like, that's been all we've talked about with them, is they weathered the storm. The Packers did this when it was hard, and now you got David Bakhtiari back and got him snaps in the last week of the season against the Detroit Lions. You're going to get your starting center Josh Myers back. You're going to get Bobby back on the other side. Those are still guys that have spent the vast majority of the year on the bench going up against a group that is tuned up on the other side. You couple that, Chris, against a rush defense for the Green Bay Packers, that in terms of EPA per play, you know, what you're expected to do, how you outperform that, they are 29th in the NFL against the run. That's not where you want to be against Kyle's version of this rushing offense that we've seen be so potent, especially with Deebo Samuel at the center. I think the Green Bay Packers still win this, Chris, but we're going to go into another weekend where I'm sure by the end of this week, there are going to be people that talk themselves into the Niners as a key upset candidate in this playoff run.
Yeah, I think it has to do with what you said, their ability to be able to run the football, because not only is that San Francisco's best way offensively of being able to move the ball, but it's also San Francisco's best way defensively to keep Aaron Rodgers and that Packers offense in check. If those guys aren't on the field, they can't light up the scoreboard. And let's not forget what we saw last year when Green Bay went out to San Francisco and Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers showed their whole behinds and showed out in a primetime matchup. So this is a situation, if you're San Francisco, you know on the back end, your secondary might not be equipped to hold up against the Packers receiver, especially the rapport that Aaron Rodgers has with that core of players. So that has to be one of those things that Kyle factors into the math in terms of his overall strategy and how he has to attack this game. The San Francisco 49ers have to have success running the football for a lot of different reasons, and going up against this Green Bay Packers defense, who allows what? The most yards before contact of any team, any defense in the National Football League. That's going to be a big challenge for them in terms of being able to rein that in. Getting back Za'Darius Smith up front is going to help. Also, getting back Jair Alexander is going to help their run defense, because they can play a lot of eight box and have some single coverage on the outsides. They can stack the line of scrimmage with defenders and try to talk Kyle Shanahan out of running that football. But that's the 49ers' only chance of being able to win this game, being able to control time of possession and dictate the complexion of it.
Kenny and Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Chris, you talked about this relative to the Titans, but the Packers have displayed an ability to win in such a myriad of ways during the course of the season based on who was and who wasn't available to them. A lot of that has to do with the fact that you got 12 playing quarterback. This was Aaron Rodgers in their press conference talking about any of the motivation for the Packers-Niners rivalry, a team he grew up rooting for heading into this game.
Not really any motivation. Motivation comes from within. I already have enough motivation on that. Inspiration, you know, I did watch this rivalry growing up. One big moment that sticks out was Young to T.O. for sure. And I think a lot of Packer fans talk about there being a fumble on that drive that wasn't called. But no extra motivation. It's just, you know, I've been around, played a lot of football. I understand the history of this rivalry, the history of us against them, but these are two different teams.
Chris, when we heard the criticism from Troy Aikman today about Dak Prescott and the Cowboys' game plan not taking advantage of soft coverage on CeeDee Lamb over the course of that game, Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams were the first pair I thought of, because in this game, we know how much Aaron Rodgers loves aborting a run play, sending it out on the perimeter when he thinks he's got that favorable mashup. That could be the nightmare that undoes the 49ers, because you want to talk about ball control, that's an easy way to maintain it the Packers take advantage of.
No doubt about it, but one of the things that we got to watch out for is how this Green Bay Packers team comes off of this bye, because Aaron Rodgers isn't one of those players that has had a lot of success in doing so. Now, this year, he was phenomenal, but he was going up against the Chicago Bears. Of course, he's going to throw for four touchdowns and no interceptions. But since the start of 2015, coming off of a bye week, when it comes to yards per attempt, Aaron Rodgers is 39th. When it comes to completion percentage, he's 34th. Total QBR, 28th. That's out of 46 qualified quarterbacks. So Aaron Rodgers ain't the best when coming off of a bye week. It'll be interesting to see if things change this time around in the postseason.
What can we expect from Aaron Rodgers in this matchup with a team he idolized in his childhood? And what can we expect for the encore performance from Josh Allen after what he did to the Patriots last week? Can he replicate that success against the Kansas City Chiefs? We'll get to that and more next here. Kenny Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.